Can he plough a field? The maester asked. Can he drive a wagon or sail a ship? Could he butcher a cow? No. Chet gave a nasty laugh. I've seen what happens to soft lordlings when they're put to work. Set them to churning butter and their hands blister and bleed. Give them an axe to split logs and they cut off their own foot. I know one thing Sam could do better than anyone. Yes, Maester Aemon prompted. John glanced warily at Chet, standing beside the door, his boils red and angry. He could help you, he said quickly. He can do sums, and he knows how to read and write. I know Chet can't read, and Clydus has weak eyes. Sam read every book in his father's library. He'd be good with the ravens, too. Animals seemed to like him. Ghost took to him straight off. There's a lot he could do besides fighting. The Night's Watch needs every man. Why kill one to no end? Make use of him instead. Maester Aemon closed his eyes, and for a brief moment John was afraid that he'd gone to sleep. Finally he said, Maester Lewin taught you well, John Snow. Your mind is as deft as your blade, it would seem. Does that mean... It means I shall think on what you have said, the maester told him firmly. And now I believe I am ready to sleep. Chet, show our young brother to the door. Tyrion. They had taken shelter beneath a copse of aspens just off the high road. Tyrion was gathering dead wood while their horses took water from a mountain stream. He stooped to pick up a splintered branch and examined it critically.
Will this do? I'm not practiced at starting fires. Morric did that for me.
A fire? Bronn said, spitting. Are you so hungry to die, dwarf? Have you taken leave of your senses? A fire will bring the clansmen down on us for miles around. I mean to survive this journey, Lannister.
And how do you hope to do that?
Tyrion asked. He tucked the branch under his arm and poked around through the sparse undergrowth looking for more. His back ached from the effort of bending. They had been riding since daybreak, when a stone-faced Selin Corbray had ushered them through the bloody gate and commanded them never to return.
We have no chance of fighting our way back, Bronn said. But two can cover more ground than 10 and attract less notice. The fewer days we spend in these mountains, the more likely we are to reach the Riverlands. Ride hard and fast, I say. Travel by night and hole up by day. Avoid the road where we can. Make no noise and light no fires.
Tyrion Lannister sighed.
A splendid plan, Bronn. Try it as you like. And forgive me if I do not linger to bury you.
You think to outlive me, dwarf?
The sellsword grinned. He had a dark gap in his smile where the edge of Savada's Egan shield had cracked a tooth in half. Tyrion shrugged.
Riding hard and fast by night is a sure way to tumble down a mountain and crack your skull. I prefer to make my crossing slow and easy. I know you love the taste of horse, Bronn, but if our mounts die under us this time, we'll be trying to saddle shadow cats. And if truth be told, I think the clans will find us no matter what we do. Their eyes are all around us.
He swept a glove hand over the high, wind-carved crags that surrounded them. Bronn grimaced.
Then we're dead men, Lannister.
If so, I prefer to die comfortable, Tyrion replied. We need a fire. The nights are cold up here, and hot food will warm our bellies and lift our spirits. Do you suppose there's any game to be had? Lady Lysa has kindly provided us with a veritable feast of salt beef, hard cheese, and stale bread. But I would hate to break a tooth so far from the nearest maester.
I can find meat.
Beneath a fall of black hair,
Bronn's dark eyes regarded Tyrion suspiciously.
I shouldn't leave you here with your fool's fire. If I took your horse, I'd have twice a chance to make it through. What would you do then, dwarf?
Die, most like.
Tyrion stooped to get another stick.
You don't think I'd do it?
Oh, you'd do it in an instant if it meant your life.
You were quick enough to silence your friend Shiggin when he caught that arrow in his belly.
Bronn had yanked back the man's head by the hair and driven the point of his dirk in under the ear, and afterward told Catelyn Stark that the other sellsword had died of his wound.
He was as good as dead, Bronn said, and his moaning was bringing them down on us. Shiggin would have done the same for me, and he was no friend, only a man I rode with. Make no mistake, dwarf. I fought for you, but I do not love you.
It was your blade I needed, Tyrion said, not your love.
He dumped his armful of wood on the ground. Bronn grinned.
You're bold as any sellsword, I'll give you that. How did you know I'd take your part?
No.
Tyrion squatted awkwardly on his stunted legs to build the fire.
I tossed the dice. Back at the inn, you and Shiggin helped take me captive. Why? The others saw it as their duty, for the honor of the lords they serve, but not you two. You had no lord, no duty, and a precious little honor. So why trouble to involve yourselves?
He took out his knife and whittled some thin strips of bark off one of the sticks he'd gathered to serve as kindling.
Well, why do sellswords do anything?
For gold.
You were thinking Lady Catelyn would reward you for your help, perhaps even take you into her service. Here, that should do, I hope. Do you have a flint?
Bronn slid two fingers into the pouch at his belt and tossed down a flint. Tyrion caught it in the air.
My thanks, he said. The thing is, you did not know the Starks. Lord Eddard is a proud, honourable and honest man, and his lady wife is worse. Oh, no doubt she would have found a coin or two for you when this was all over, and pressed it in your hand with a polite word and a look of distaste. But that's the most you can hope for. The Starks look for courage and loyalty and honour in the men they choose to serve them. And if truth be told, you and Shiggin were low-born scum.
Tyrion struck the flint against his dagger, trying for a spark. Nothing. Bronn snorted.
You have a bold tongue, little man. One day, someone is like to cut it out and make you eat it.
Everyone tells me that.
Tyrion glanced up at the sellsword.
Did I offend you? Oh, my pardons. But you are scum, Bronn. Make no mistake. Duty, honour, friendship, what's that to you?
No, don't trouble yourself. We both know the answer.
Still, you're not stupid. Once we reached the Vale, Lady Stark had no more need of you. But I did. And the one thing the Lannisters have never lacked for is gold. When the moment came to toss the dice, I was counting on your being smart enough to know where your best interests lay. Happily for me, you did.
He slammed stone and steel together again, fruitlessly.
Here, said Bronn, squatting. I'll do it.
He took the knife and flint from Tyrion's hand and struck sparks on his first try. A curl of bark began to smoulder.
Well done, Tyrion said. Scum you may be, but you're undeniably useful, and with a sword in your hand, you're almost as good as my brother Jaime. What do you want, Bronn? Gold? Land? Women? Keep me alive, and you'll have it.
Bronn blew gently on the fire, and the flames leaped up higher.
And if you die?
Why then? I'll have one mourner whose grief is sincere,
Tyrion said, grinning.
The gold ends when I do.
The fire was blazing up nicely. Bronn stood, tucked the flint back into his pouch, and tossed Tyrion his dagger.
Fair enough, he said. My sword's yours then. But don't go looking for me to bend the knee and milord you every time you take a shit. I'm no man's toady.
Nor any man's friend, Tyrion said. I've no doubt you'll betray me as quick as you did Lady Stark. if you saw a profit in it. If the day ever comes when you're tempted to sell me out, remember this, Bron. I'll match their price, whatever it is. I like living. And now, do you think you could do something about finding us some supper?
Take care of the horses, Bron said, unsheathing the long dirk he wore at his hip. He strode into the trees. An hour later, the horses had been rubbed down and fed, the fire was crackling away merrily, and a haunch of a young goat was turning above the flames, spitting and hissing.
All we lack now is some good wine to wash down our kid, Tyrion said.
That, a woman, and another dozen swords,
Bronn said. He sat cross-legged beside the fire, honing the edge of his long sword with an oilstone.
There was something strangely reassuring about the rasping sound it made when he drew it down the steel.
It will be full dark soon,
the sellsword pointed out.
I'll take first watch. For the good it'll do us. It might be kinder to let them kill us in our sleep.
Oh, I imagine they'll be here long before it comes to sleep.
The smell of the roasting meat made Tyrion's mouth water. Bron watched him across the fire.
You have a plan?
He said flatly, with a scrape of steel on stone.
A hope, I call it, Tyrion said. Another toss of the dice.
With our lives as a stake?
Tyrion shrugged.
Well, what choice do we have?
He leaned over the fire and sawed a thin slice of meat from the kid.
Ah,
he sighed happily as he chewed. Grease ran down his chin.
A bit tougher than I'd liked, and in want of spicing, but I'll not complain too loudly. If I were back at the Eyrie, I'd be dancing on a precipice in hopes of a boiled bean.
And yet you gave the turnkey a purse of gold,
Bron said.
A Lannister always pays his debts.
Even Maud had scarcely believed it when Tyrion tossed him the leather purse. The jailer's eyes had gone big as boiled eggs as he yanked open the drawstring and beheld the glint of gold.
I kept the silver, Tyrion had told him, with a crooked smile. But you were promised the gold, and there it is.
It was more than a man like Maud could hope to earn in a lifetime of abusing prisoners.
And remember what I said. This is only a taste. If you ever grow tired of Lady Arryn's service, present yourself at Casterly Rock, and I'll pay you the rest of what I owe you.
With golden dragons spilling out of both hands, Maud had fallen to his knees and promised that he would do just that. Bron yanked out his dirk and pulled the meat from the fire. He began to carve thick chunks of charred meat off the bone as Tyrion hollowed out two heels of stale bread to serve as trenchers.
If we do reach the river, what will you do then?
The sellsword asked as he cut.
Oh, a hoer, and a feather bed, and a flagon of wine for a start.
Tyrion held out his trencher, and Bron filled it with meat.
And then to Casterly Rock or King's Landing, I think. I have some questions that want answering concerning a certain dagger.
The sellsword chewed and swallowed.
So you were telling it true. It was not your knife.
Tyrion smiled thinly.
Do I look a liar to you?
By the time their bellies were full, the stars had come out and a half moon was rising over the mountains. Tyrion spread his shadow skin cloak on the ground and stretched out with his saddle for a pillow.
Our friends are taking their sweet time.
If I were them, I'd fear a trap, Bron said. Why else would we be so open, if not to lure them in?
Tyrion chuckled.
Then we ought to sing and send them fleeing in terror.
He began to whistle a tune.
You're mad, dwarf,
Bron said, as he cleared the grease from under his nails with his dirk.
Where's your love of music, Bron?
If it was music you wanted, you should have gotten a singer to champion you.
Tyrion grinned.
That would have been amusing. I can just see him fending off Ser Vardis with his wood harp.
He resumed his whistling.
Do you know this song? He asked.
You hear it here and there, in inns and all houses.
Moorish, the seasons of my love, sweet and sad, if you understand the words. The first girl I ever bed in used to sing it, and I've never been able to put it out of my head. Tyrion gazed up at the sky. It was a clear, cold night, and the stars shone down upon the mountains as bright and merciless as truth. I met her on a night like this, he heard himself saying. Jamie and I were riding back from Lannisport when we heard a scream, and she came running out into the road with two men dogging her heels, shouting threats. My brother unsheathed his sword and went after them, while I dismounted to protect the girl. She was scarcely a year older than I was, dark-haired, slender, with a face that would break your heart. It certainly broke mine. Low-born, half-starved, unwashed, yet lovely. They'd torn the rag she was wearing half off her back, so I wrapped her in my cloak while Jamie chased the men into the woods. By the time he came trotting back, I'd gotten a name out of her and a story. She was a crofter's child, orphaned, when her father died of fever on her way to, well, nowhere, really. Jamie was all in a lather to hunt down the men. It was not often outlaws dead prey on travellers so near to Castle Rock, and he took it as an insult. The girl was too frightened to send off by herself, though, so I offered to take her to the closest inn and feed her while my brother rode back to the rock for help. She was hungrier than I would have believed. We finished two whole chickens and part of a third and drank a flagon of wine, talking. I was only 13, and the wine went to my head, I fear. The next thing I knew, I was sharing her bed. If she was shy, I was shyer. I'll never know where I found the courage. When I broke her maidenhead, she wept. But afterward, she kissed me and sang her little song. And by morning, I was in love.
You?
Bronn's voice was amused. Absurd, isn't it? Tyrion began to whistle the song again. I married her, he finally admitted.
A Lannister of Castle Rock, wed to a crofter's daughter, Bronn said. How could you manage that?
Oh, you'd be astonished at what a boy can make of a few lies, 50 pieces of silver, and a drunken septon. I dared not bring my bride home to Castle Rock, so I set her up in a cottage of her own, and for a fortnight we played at being man and wife. And then the septon sobered and confessed all to my lord father. Tyrion was surprised how desolate it made him feel to say it, even after all these years. Perhaps he was just tired. That was the end of my marriage. He sat up and stared at the dying fire, blinking at the light.
He sent the girl away?
He did better than that, Tyrion said. First, he made my brother tell me the truth. The girl was a whore, you see. Jamie arranged the whole affair, the road, the outlaws, all of it. He thought it was time I had a woman. He paid double for a maiden, knowing it would be my first time. After Jamie had made his confession, to drive home the lesson, Lord Tywin brought my wife in and gave her to his guards. They paid her fair enough, a silver for each man. How many whores command that higher price? He sat me down in the corner of the barracks and bade me watch. And at the end, she had so many silvers, the coins were slipping through her fingers and rolling on the floor. The smoke was stinging his eyes. Tyrion cleared his throat and turned away from the fire to gaze into the darkness. Lord Tywin had me go last, he said in a quiet voice, and he gave me a gold coin to pay her.
because I was a Lannister. And worth more.
After a time, he heard the noise again. The rasp of steel on stone, as Brunn sharpened his sword.
13, or 30, or 3. I would have killed the man who did that to me.
Tyrion swung around to face him.
You may get that chance one day. Remember what I told you. A Lannister always pays his debts.
He yawned.
I think I will try that sleep.
Wake me if we're about to die.
He rolled himself up in the shadow skin and shut his eyes. The ground was stony and cold. But after a time, Tyrion Lannister did sleep. He dreamt of the Sky Cell. This time, he was the jailer, not the prisoner. Big, with a strap in his hand, and he was hitting his father, driving him back towards the abyss.
Tyrion?
Bronn's warning was low and urgent. Tyrion was awake in the blink of an eye. The fire had burned down to embers, and the shadows were creeping in all round them. Bronn had raised himself to one knee, his sword in one hand and his dirk in the other. Tyrion held up a hand. Stay still, it said.
Come, share our fire. The night is cold, he called out to the creeping shadows. I fear we've no wine to offer you, but you're welcome to some of our goat.
All movement stopped. Tyrion saw the glint of moonlight on metal.
Our mountain,
a voice called out from the trees, deep and hard and unfriendly.
Our goat.
Your goat, Tyrion agreed. Who are you? When you meet your guards, a different voice replied, say it was Gunther, son of Gurn of the Stone Crows, who sent you to them.
A branch cracked underfoot as he stepped into the light, a thin man with a horned helmet, armed with a long knife.
And Shagger, son of Dolph.
That was the first voice, deep and deadly. A boulder shifted to their left and stood and became a man.
Massive and slow and strong he seemed, dressed all in skins with a club in his right hand and an axe in his left. He smashed them together as he lumbered closer.
Other voices called other names. Conn and Torric and Jagat and more that Tyrion forgot the instant he heard them. 10 at least. A few had swords and knives, others brandished pitchforks and scythes and wooden spears. He waited until they'd done shouting out their names before he gave them an answer.
I am Tyrion, son of Tywin of the Clan Lannister, the Lions of the Rock. We will gladly pay you for the goat we ate.
What have you got to give us, Tyrion, son of Tywin?
Asked the one who named himself Gunther, who seemed to be their chief.
There is silver in my purse, Tyrion told them. This hauberk I wear is large for me, but it should fit Conn nicely, and the battle axe I carry would suit Shaggy's mighty hand far better than the wood axe he holds. The half-man would pay us with our own coin, said Conn.
Conn speaks truly, Gunther said. Your silver's ours, your horses are ours, your hauberk and your battle axe and the knife at your belt, these are ours too. You have nothing to give us but your lives. How would you like to die, Tyrion, son of Tywin?
In my own bed, with a belly full of wine and a maiden's mouth around my cock at the age of 80, he replied.
The huge one, Shagger, laughed first and loudest. The others seemed less amused.
Conn, take their horses, Gunther commanded. Kill the other and seize the half-man. He can milk the goats and make the mothers laugh.
Bronn sprang to his feet.
Who dies first?
No,
Tyrion said sharply.
Gunther, son of Gurn, hear me. My house is rich and powerful. If the Stone Crows will see us safely through these mountains, my lord father will shower you with gold.
The gold of a lowland lord is as worthless as a half-man's promises, Gunther said.
Half a man I may be, Tyrion said, yet I have the courage to face my enemies.
What do the stone crows do but hide behind rocks and shiver with fear as the knights of the Vale ride by? Shagger gave a roar of anger and clashed club against axe. Jagat poked at Tyrion's face with the far-hardened point of a long wooden spear. He did his best not to flinch.
"Are these the best weapons you got steel?" he said. "Good enough for killing sheep, perhaps, if the sheep do not fight back. My father's smiths shit better steel."
"Our little boy man," Shagger replied, "will you mock my axe after I chop off your manhood and feed it to the goats?"
But Gunther raised a hand.
"No, I would hear his words. The mothers go hungry, and steel fills more mouths than gold. What would you give us for your lives, Tyrion, son of Tywin? Swords? Lances? Mail?"
"All that and more, Gunther, son of Gurn," Tyrion Lannister replied, smiling. "I will give you the Vale of Arryn."
Eddard. Through the high, narrow windows of the Red Keep's cavernous throne room, the light of sunset spilled across the floor, laying dark red stripes upon the walls where the heads of dragons had once hung. Now the stone was covered with hunting tapestries, vivid with greens and browns and blues, and yet it still seemed to Ned Stark that the only color in the hall was the red of blood. He sat high upon the immensely ancient seat of Aegon the Conqueror, an ironwork monstrosity of spikes and jagged edges and grotesquely twisted metal. It was, as Robert had warned him, a hellishly uncomfortable chair, and never more so than now, with his shattered leg throbbing more sharply every minute. The metal beneath him had grown harder by the hour, and the fanged steel behind made it impossible to lean back. A king should never sit easy, Aegon the Conqueror had said, when he commanded his armorers to forge a great seat from swords laid down by his enemies.
Damn Aegon for his arrogance, Ned thought solemnly, and damn Robert and his hunting as well.
You are quite certain these are more than Brigands? Varys asked softly from the council table beneath the throne.
Grandmaster Pycelle stirred uneasily beside him, while Littlefinger toyed with a pen. They were the only councillors in attendance. A white hart had been sighted in the Kingswood, and Lord Renly and Sir Barristan had joined the king to hunt it, along with Prince Joffrey, Sandor Clegane, Balin Swan, and half the court. So Ned must needs sit the Iron Throne in his absence. At least he could sit. Save the council, the rest must stand respectfully or kneel. The petitioners clustered near the tall doors, the knights and high lords and ladies beneath the tapestries, the small folk in the gallery, the male guards in their cloaks, gold or grey, all stood. The villagers were kneeling, men, women and children, alike tattered and bloody, their faces drawn by fear. The three knights who had brought them here to bear witness stood behind them.
"Brigands, Lord Varys?" Sir Raymond Darry's voice dripped scorn. "Oh, they were brigands beyond a doubt. Lannister brigands."
Ned could feel the unease in the hall, as high lords and servants alike strained to listen. He could not pretend to surprise. The West had been a tinderbox since Catelyn had seized Tyrion Lannister. Both Riverrun and Castle Rock had called their banners, and armies were massing in the pass below the Golden Tooth. It had only been a matter of time until the blood began to flow. The sole question that remained was how best to staunch the wound. Sad-eyed, Sir Carol Vance, who would have been handsome but for the wine-stained birthmark that discolored his face, gestured at the kneeling villagers.
"This is all that remains of the holdfast of Shearer, Lord Eddard. The rest are dead, along with the people of Wendish Town and the Mummer's Ford."
"Rise," Ned commanded the villagers. He never trusted what a man told him from his knees. "All of you, up." In ones and twos, The Holdfast of Shira struggled to its feet. One ancient needed to be helped, and a young girl in a bloody dress stayed on her knees, staring blankly at Sir Aerys Oakheart, who stood by the foot of the throne in the white armor of the King's Guard, ready to protect and defend the king. Or Ned supposed the king's hand. "Joss," Sir Raymond Darry said to a plump, balding man in a brewer's apron, "tell the hand what happened at Shearer." Joss nodded.
"If it please His Grace."
"His Grace is hunting across the Blackwater," Ned said, wondering how a man could live his whole life a few days' ride from the Red Keep and still have no notion what his king looked like. Ned was clad in a white linen doublet with a direwolf of Stark on the breast. His black wool cloak was fastened at the collar by the silver hand of office. Black and white and grey, all the shades of truth. "I am Lord Eddard Stark, the King's Hand. Tell me who you are and what you know of these raiders."
I capped an alehouse, my lord, in Shearer, by the Stone Bridge. The finest ale south of the Neck. Everyone said so, begging your pardons, my lord. It's gone now, like all the rest, my lord. They come and drank their fill and spilled the rest before they fired my roof. And they would have spilled my blood, too, if they caught me, my lord.
They burnt us out, a farmer beside him said. Come riding in the dark, up from the south, and fired the fields and the houses alike. Killing them is trying to stop them. There weren't no raiders, though, my lord. They had no mind to steal our stock. Not these. They butchered my milk cow where she stood and left her for the flies and the crows.
They rode down my prentice boy, said a squat man with a smith's muscles and a bandage around his head.
He had put on his finest clothes to come to court, but his breeches were patched, his cloak travel-stained and dusty.
Chased him back and forth across the fields on their horses, poking at him with their lances like it was a game. Them laughing and the boys tumbling and screaming till the big one pierced him clean through.
The girl on her knees craned her head up at Ned, high above her on the throne.
They killed my mother too, Your Grace, and they...
Her voice trailed off as if she had forgotten what she was about to say. She began to sob. Sir Raymond Darry took up the tale.
At Windyshan, the people sought shelter in their holdfast, but the walls were timbered. The raiders piled straw against the wood and burnt them all alive. When the Wendish folk opened their gates to flee the fire, they shot them down with arrows as they came running out, even women with suckling babes.
Oh, dreadful, murmured Varys. How cruel can men be?
They would have done the same for us, but the Shearer holdfast made of stone, Joss said. Some wanted to smoke us out, but the big one said there was riper fruit upriver, and they made for the Mummer's Ford.
Ned could feel cold steel against his fingers as he leaned forward. Between each finger was a blade, the points of twisted swords, fanning out like talons from the arms of the throne. Even after 3 centuries, some were still sharp enough to cut. The Iron Throne was full of traps for the unwary. The song said it had taken 1,000 blades to make it, heated white hot in the furnace breath of Balerion the Black Dread. The hammering had taken 59 days. The end of it was this hunchback beast made of razor edges and barbs and ribbons of sharp metal. A chair that could kill a man, and had, if the stories could be believed. What Eddard Stark was doing sitting there, he would never comprehend. Yet there he sat. And these people looked to him for justice. What proof do you have that these were Lannisters? He asked, trying to keep his fury under control. Did they wear crimson cloaks or fly a lion banner?
Even Lannisters are not so blind stupid as that, Sir Mark Piper snapped.
He was a swaggering bantam rooster of a youth, too young and too hot-blooded for Ned's taste, though a fast friend of Catelyn's brother, Edmure Tully. Every man among them was mounted and mailed, my lord, Sir Carol answered calmly. They were armed with with steel-tipped lances and longswords, with battle axes for the butchering. He gestured toward one of the ragged survivors. You. Yes, you. No one's going to hurt you. Tell the hand what you told me. The old man bobbed his head.
Concerning their horses, he said, it were war horses they rode. Many a year I walked in old Sir Willem's stables, so I knows the difference. Not a one of these ever pulled a plough. God's bear witness if I'm wrong.
Well mounted, brigands, observed Littlefinger. Perhaps they stole the horses from the last place they raided. How many men were there in this raiding party, Ned asked. 100 at the least, Joss answered. In the same instant, as the bandaged smith said, 50. And the grandmother behind him?
Onards and onards, my lord, an army there was.
You are more right than you know, good woman, Lord Eddard told her. You say they flew no banners. What of the armor they wore? Did any of you note ornaments or decorations, devices on shields or helm? The brewer, Joss, shook his head.
It grieves me, my lord, but no. The armor they showed us was plain, only the one who led them, he was armored like the rest, but there was no mistaking him all the same. It was the size of him, my lord. Those as say the giants are all dead never saw this one, I swear. Big as an ox he was, and a voice like stone breaking.
The mountain, Sir Mark said loudly. Can any man doubt it? This was Gregor Clegane's work.
Ned heard muttering from beneath the windows and the far end of the hall. Even in the galley, nervous whispers were exchanged. High lords and small folk alike knew what it could mean if Sir Mark was proved right. Sir Gregor Clegane stood bannerman to Lord Tywin Lannister. He studied the frightened faces of the villagers. Small wonder they had been so fearful. They had thought they were being dragged here to name Lord Tywin a red-handed butcher before a king who was his son by marriage. He wondered if the knights had given them a choice. Grand Maester Pycelle rose ponderously from the council table, his chain of offers clinking.
Sir Mark, with respect, you cannot know that this outlaw was Sir Gregor. There are many large men in the realm.
As large as the mountain that rides, Sir Carroll said. I've never met one.
Nor has any man here, Sir Raymond added hotly. Even his brother is a pup beside him. My lords, open your eyes. Do you need to see his seal on the corpses? This was Gregor.
Why should Sir Gregor turn brigand? Pycelle asked. By the grace of his liege lord, he holds a stout keep and lands of his own. The man is an anointed knight.
A false knight, Sir Mark said. Lord Tywin's mad dog.
My lord hand, Pycelle declared in a stiff voice, I urge you to remind this good knight that Lord Tywin Lannister is the father of our own gracious queen.
Thank you, Grand Maester Pycelle, Ned said. I fear we might have forgotten that if you hadn't pointed it out. From his vantage point at the top of the throne, he could see men slipping out the door at the far end of the hall. Hares going to ground, he supposed, or rats off to nibble the queen's cheese. He caught a glimpse of Septa Mordaine in the gallery with his daughter Sansa behind her. Ned felt a flash of anger. This was no place for a girl, but the Septa could not have known that today's court would be anything but the usual tedious business of hearing petitions, settling disputes between rival holdfasts, and adjudicating the placement of boundary stones. At the council table below, Petire Baelish lost interest in his quill and leaned forward.
Sir Mark, Sir Carl, Sir Raymond, perhaps I might ask you a question. These holdfasts were under your protection. Where were you when all this slaughtering and burning was going on?
Sir Carl Vance answered, I was attending my lord father in the pass below the Golden Tooth, as was Sir Mark. When the word of these outrages reached Sir Edmure Tully,
He sent word that we should take a small force of men to find what survivors we could and bring them to the king.
Sir Raymond Darry spoke up.
Sir Edmure had summoned me to River Run with all my strength. I was camped across the river from his walls, awaiting his commands, when the word reached me. By the time I could return to my own lands, Clegane and his vermin were back across the Red Fork, riding for Lannister's hills.
Littlefinger stroked the point of his beard thoughtfully. And if they come again, sir?
If they come again, we'll use their blood to water the fields they burnt, Sir Mark Piper declared hotly.
Sir Edmure has sent men to every village and holdfast within a day's ride of the border, Sir Carol explained. The next raider will not have such an easy time of it.
And that may be precisely what Lord Tywin wants, Ned thought to himself, to bleed off strength from River Run, goad the boy into scattering his swords. His wife's brother was young and more gallant than wise. He would try to hold every inch of his soil to defend every man, woman, and child who named him lord. And Tywin Lannister was shrewd enough to know that.
If your fields and Holdfast are safe from harm, Lord Petyr was saying, what then do you ask of the throne?
The lords of the tyrant keep the king's peace, Sir Raymond Darry said. The Lannisters have broken it. We ask leave to answer them steel for steel. We ask justice for the small folk of Shearer and Windishtown and the Mummer's Ford.
Edmure agrees we must pay Gregor Clegane back his bloody coin, Sir Mark declared. But old Lord Hoster commanded us to come here and beg the king's leave before we strike.
Thank the gods for old Lord Hoster, then. Tywin Lannister was as much fox as lion. If indeed he'd sent Sir Gregor to burn and pillage, and Ned did not doubt that he had, he'd taken care to see that he rode under cover of night, without banners, in the guise of a common brigand. Should River Run strike back, Cersei and her father would insist that it had been the Tullys who broke the king's peace, not the Lannisters. The guards only knew what Robert would believe. Grand Maester Pycelle was on his feet again.
My Lord Hand, if these good folk believe that Sir Gregor has forsaken his holy vows for plunder and rape, let them go to his liege lord and make their complaint. These crimes are no concern of the throne. Let them seek Lord Tywin's justice.
It is all the king's justice, Ned told him. North, south, east, or west. All we do in Robert's name.
The king's justice, Grand Maester Pycelle said. So it is, and we should defer this matter until the king...
The king is hunting across the river and may not return for days, Lord Eddard said. Robert bid me to sit here in his place, to listen with his ears and to speak with his voice. I mean to do just that. Though I agree he must be told.
He saw a familiar face beneath the tapestry. Sir Robert Royce stepped forward and bowed.
My lord,
your father is hunting with the king, Ned said. Will you bring them word of what was said and done here today?
At once, my lord. Do we have your leave to take our vengeance against Sir Gregor, then?
Mark Piper asked the throne.
Vengeance, Ned said.
I thought we were speaking of justice. Burning Clegane's fields and slaughtering his people will not restore the king's peace, only your injured pride.
He glanced away before the young knight could voice his outraged protest and address the villagers.
People of Shearer, I cannot give you back your homes or your crops, nor can I restore your dead to life. But perhaps I can give you some small measure of justice in the name of our king, Robert. Every eye in the hall was fixed on him, waiting. Slowly, Ned struggled to his feet, pushing himself up from the throne with the strength of his arms, his shattered leg screaming inside its cast. He did his best to ignore the pain. It was no moment
to let them see his weakness. The first man believed that the judge who called for death should wield the sword. And in the north, we hold to that still. I mislike sending another to do my killing. Yet it seems I have no choice. He gestured at his broken leg. Lord Eddard, a shot came from the west side of the hall as a handsome stripling of a boy strode forth boldly. Out of his armor, Sir Loras Tyrell looked even younger than his 16 years. He wore pale blue silk, his belt a linked chain of golden roses, the sigil of his house. I beg you the honor of acting in your place. Give this task to me, my lord, and I swear I shall not fail you. Littlefinger chuckled. Sir Loras, if we send you off alone, Sir Gregor will send us back your head with a plum stuffed in that pretty mouth of yours. The mountain is not the sort to bend his neck to any man's justice. I do not fear Gregor Clegane, Sir Loras said haughtily. Ned eased himself slowly back onto the hard iron seat of Aegon's misshapen throne. His eyes searched the faces along the wall. Lord Beric, he called out. Thoris of Myr, Sir Gladden, Lord Lothar. The men named stepped forward one by one. Each of you is to assemble 20 men to bring my word to Gregor's keep. 20 of my own guard shall go with you. Lord Beric Dondarrion, you shall have the command, as befits your rank. The young lord with the red-gold hair bowed. As you command, Lord Eddard. Ned raised his voice, so it carried to the far end of the throne room. In the name of Robert of the House Baratheon, the first of his name, King of the Andals, of the Ronar and the First Men, Lord of the Seven Kingdoms and Protector of the Realm, by the word of Eddard of the House Stark, his hand, I charge you to ride to the Westlands with all haste, to cross the Red Fork of the Trident under the king's flag, and there bring the king's justice to the false knight Gregor Clegane. And to all those who share in his crimes, I denounce him and attaint him, and strip him of all rank and titles, of all lands and incomes and holdings, and do sentence him to death. May the gods take pity on his soul. When the echo of his words had died away, the Knight of Flowers seemed perplexed. Lord Eddard, what of me? Ned looked down on him. From on high, Loras Tyrell seemed almost as young as Rob. No one doubts your valor, Sir Loras, but we are about justice here, and what you seek is vengeance. He looked back to Lord Beric. Ride at first light. These things are best done quickly. He held up a hand. The throne will hear no more petitions today. Alan and Portha climbed the steep iron steps to help him back down. As they made their descent, he could feel Loras Tyrell's sullen stare. But the boy had stalked away before Ned reached the floor of the throne room. At the base of the Iron Throne, Varys was gathering papers from the council table. Littlefinger and Grand Maester Pycelle had already taken their leave.
You are a bolder man than I, my lord, the eunuch said softly.
How so, Lord Varys? Ned asked brusquely. His leg was throbbing and he was in no mood for word games.
Had it been me up there, I should have sent Sir Loras. He so wanted to go. And a man who has the Lannisters for enemies would do well to make the Tyrells his friends.
Sir Loras is young, said Ned. I dare say he will outgrow the disappointment.
And Sir Ilion.
The eunuch stroked a plump, powdered cheek.
He is the king's justice, after all. Sending other men to do his office. Some might construe that as a grave insult.
No slight was intended. In truth, Ned did not trust the mute knight, though perhaps that was only because he misliked executioners. I remind you the Paynes are bannermen to House Lannister. I thought it best to choose men who owed Lord Tywin no fealty.
Very prudent, no doubt, Varys said. Still, I chanced to see Sir Ilion in the back of the hall, staring at us with those pale eyes of his, and I must say, he did not look pleased. Though, to be sure, it's hard to tell with our silent night. I hope he outgrows his disappointment as well. He does so love his work.
Sansa. He wouldn't censor Loras, Sansa told Jane Poole that night as they shared a cold supper by lamplight. I think it was because of his leg.
Lord Eddard had taken his supper in his bedchamber with Alan, Harwin, and Vaen Poole, the better to rest his broken leg, and Septa Mordane had complained of sore feet after standing in the gallery all day. Arya was supposed to join them, but she was late coming back from her dancing lesson.
His leg? Jane said uncertainly. She was a pretty, dark-haired girl of Sansa's own age. Did Sir Loras hurt his leg?
Not his leg, Sansa said, nibbling delicately at a chicken leg.
Father's leg, silly. It hurts him ever so much, it makes him cross. Otherwise, I'm certain he would have sent Sir Loras.
Her father's decision still bewildered her. When the Knight of Flowers had spoken up, she'd been sure she was about to see one of old Nan's stories come to life. Sir Gregor was the monster and Sir Loras the true hero who would slay him. He even looked a hero, so slim and beautiful, with golden roses around his slender waist and his rich brown hair tumbling down into his eyes. And then Father had refused him. It had upset her more than she could tell. She had said so much to Septa Mordane as they descended the stairs from the gallery. But the scepter had only told her it was not her place to question her Lord Father's decisions. That was when Lord Baelish had said, "Oh, I don't know, scepter. Some of her Lord Father's decisions could do with a bit of questioning. The young lady is as wise as she is lovely." He made a sweeping bow to Sansa, so deep she was not quite sure whether she was being complimented or mocked. Septa Mordane had been very upset to realize that Lord Baelish had overheard them.
"The girl was just talking, my lord," she said. "Foolish chatter. She means nothing by the comment."
Lord Baelish stroked his little pointed beard and said,
"Nothing? Tell me, child, why would you have sent Sir Loras?"
Sansa had no choice but to explain about heroes and monsters. The king's counselor smiled.
"Well, those are not the reasons I'd have given, but..."
He had touched her cheek, his thumb lightly tracing the line of a cheekbone.
"Life is not a song, sweetling. You may learn that one day, to your sorrow."
Sansa did not feel like telling all that to Jane, however. It made her uneasy just to think back on it.
"Sir Ilion's the king's justice. Not Sir Loras," Jane said. "Lord Eddard should have sent him."
Sansa shuddered. Every time she looked at Sir Ilion Payne, she shivered. He made her feel as though something dead was slithering over her naked skin. "Sir Ilion's almost like a second monster. I'm glad Father didn't pick him.
Lord Beric is as much a hero as Sir Loras. He's ever so brave and gallant."
"I suppose," Sansa said doubtfully. "Beric Dondarrion was handsome enough, but he was awfully old, almost 22. The Knight of Flowers would have been much better." Of course, Jane had been in love with Lord Beric ever since she had first glimpsed him in the lists. Sansa thought she was being silly. Jane was only a Stuart's daughter, after all, and no matter how much she mooned after him, Lord Beric would never look at someone so far beneath him, even if she hadn't been half his age. It would have been unkind to say so, however, so Sansa took a sip of milk and changed the subject.
"I had a dream that Joffrey would be the one to take the White Hart," she said. It had been more of a wish, actually, but it sounded better to call it a dream. Everyone knew that dreams were prophetic.
White hearts were supposed to be very rare and magical. And in her heart, she knew her gallant prince was worthier than his drunken father. A dream, truly. Did Prince Joffrey just go up to it and touch it with his bare hand and do it no harm? No, Sansa said. He shot it with a golden arrow and brought it back for me. In the songs, the knights never killed magical beasts. They just went up to them and touched them and did them no harm. But she knew Joffrey liked hunting, especially the killing part. Only animals, though. Sansa was certain her prince had no part in murdering Jory and those other poor men. That had been his wicked uncle, the Kingslayer. She knew her father was still angry about that, but it wasn't fair to blame Joff. That would be like blaming her for something that Arya had done. I saw your sister this afternoon, Jane blurted out, as if she'd been reading Sansa's thoughts. She was walking through the stables on her hands. Why would she do a thing like that? I'm sure I don't know why Arya does anything. Sansa hated stables, smelly places, full of manure and flies. Even when she went riding, she liked the boy to saddle the horse and bring it to her in the yard. Do you want to hear about the court or not? I do, Jane said. There was a black brother, Sansa said, begging men for the wall, only he was kind of old and smelly. She hadn't liked that at all. She had always imagined the Night's Watch to be men like Uncle Benjen. In the songs, they were called the Black Knights of the Wall. But this man had been crook-backed and hideous, and he looked as though he might have lice. If this was what the Night's Watch was truly like, she felt sorry for her bastard half-brother John. Father asked if there were any knights in the hall who would do honor to their houses by taking the black, but no one came forward. So he gave this Yoren his pick of the king's dungeons and sent him on his way. And later, these two brothers came before him, free riders from the Dornish marches, and pledged their swords to the service of the king. Father accepted their oaths. Jane yawned. Are there any lemon cakes? Sansa did not like being interrupted, but she had to admit lemon cakes sounded more interesting than most of what had gone on in the throne room. Let's see, she said. The kitchen yielded no lemon cakes, but they did find half of a cold strawberry pie, and that was almost as good. They ate it on the tower steps, giggling and gossiping and sharing secrets. And Sansa went to bed that night, feeling almost as wicked as Arya. The next morning, she woke before first light and crept sleepily to her window to watch Lord Beric form up his men. They rode out as dawn was breaking over the city, with three banners going before them. The crown stag of the king flew from the high staff, the direwolf of Stark, and Lord Beric's own forked lightning standard from shorter poles. It was all so exciting. A song come to life. The clatter of swords, the flicker of torchlight, banners dancing in the wind, horses snorting and winnowing, the golden glow of sunrise slanting through the bars of the portcullis as it jerked upward. The Winterfell men looked especially fine in their silvery mail and long grey cloaks. Alan carried the Stark banner. When she saw him rein in beside Lord Beric to exchange words, it made Sansa feel ever so proud. Alan was handsomer than Jory had been. He was going to be a knight one day. The Tower of the Hand seemed so empty after they left that Sansa was even pleased to see Arya when she went down to break her fast. Where is everyone? Her sister wanted to know as she ripped the skin from a blood orange. Did Father send them to hunt down Jaime Lannister? Sansa sighed. They rode with Lord Beric to behead Sir Gregor Clegane. She turned to Septa Mordaine, who was eating porridge with a wooden spoon. Septa, will Lord Beric spike Sir Gregor's head on his own gate or bring it back here for the king? She and Jane Poole had been arguing over that last night. The Septa was horror-struck. A lady does not discuss such things over her porridge. Where are your courtesies, Sansa? I swear of late you've been near as bad as your sister. What did Gregor do? Arya asked. He burnt down a whole fast and murdered a lot of people, women and children too. Arya screwed up her face in a scowl.
Jaime Lannister murdered Jorri and Hewitt and Will, and the Hound murdered Micah. Somebody should have beheaded them. It's not the same, Sansa said. The Hound is Geoffrey's sworn shield. Your butcher's boy attacked the prince.